There are many people who argue that if the United States is to meet its need for energy while at the same time cutting carbon emissions that contribute to global warming, we will have to increase the use of nuclear power. Now, of course, there are other people who argue that nuclear power just has too many negatives, including the high cost of construction of plants and also the problem of highly radioactive waste. This morning, in this hour of focus, we will try to consider some of the pros and cons of nuclear power as we talk with Dr. Dale Klein. He is the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. He's the principal executive officer of and the official spokesman for the NRC, which is responsible for the safety and the licensing of civilian nuclear reactors and also the issue of waste management. Let me tell you just a little bit more about him. Before joining the NRC, Dr. Klein served as the assistant to the Secretary of Defense for Nuclear and Chemical and Biological Defense Programs. And before that, he held a number of posts at the University of Texas at Austin. He served as Vice Chancellor for Special Engineering Programs and also as professor in the Department of Mechanical Engineering. He's a native of Missouri, has bachelor's and master's degrees in mechanical engineering and a doctorate in nuclear engineering, all from the University of Missouri, Columbia. He's going to be here on the campus of the University of Illinois next week. And I'll tell you maybe a little bit more about this later, but I do want to mention certainly here at the beginning that he will be on the campus for a panel discussion on the vision for the future of nuclear energy. And this is taking place next Thursday, September 11th, starting at 3:30 in the afternoon. This is at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center. And this is part of a series of events that mark the 50th anniversary of the Department of Nuclear, Plasma, and Radiological Engineering here at the U of I. And this panel discussion and another talk are open to the public, so anybody who is here in and around Champaign-Urbana who's interested in attending should feel welcome. I'll maybe tell you a little bit more about that later. More information certainly is available if you go to the website of Nuclear Engineering, which is www.ne.uiuc.edu. In this hour, we certainly welcome calls, and I expect that we will have a number of people, and you can help us by trying to keep your comments brief so that we can get in as many different callers as possible. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana, and we also do have that toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. At any point here, questions are certainly welcome. Dr. Klein, hello.
Good morning, David. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
Well, doing good.
Good. I'm glad you could talk with us. We certainly appreciate it.
Well, looking forward to seeing what kind of questions come out of the university area this morning.
Well, let me, just to start, today, what percentage of the electricity generated here in the United States is generated by a nuclear plants?
About 20%.
All right, 20%.
And we have 104 nuclear plants in operation.
All right. This next question, this is obviously difficult because there are many variables, and I'm sure that whoever you ask different people, you're going to get a different answer. But let us say we go out 20 years into the future. At that point, 20 years from now, what would you think the contribution of nuclear generation would be? Is there a way to answer that question?
Well, the numbers that we have heard from the Department of Energy is that at about 2030, the baseload demand for electricity will increase by about 50%. And for nuclear power to maintain 20%, we would need to add about 50 new 1,000-megawatt nuclear plants.
Okay, so if we are just even going to hold at 20%, that means that we would have to build 50 new plants.
Yes, by about 2030.
And is the thinking that the contribution of nuclear generation in the mix is still likely to be 20%?
You know, that's hard to tell. We currently have applications in hand. We have 12 applications for 20 nuclear plants currently. And by the end of the calendar year 2009, we expect to have around 30 nuclear plant requests. So we could be on target for that many. And part of that just depends on what industry does. As the regulator, we're not the promoter. What we try to do is protect people and the environment. And so it's really up to the Department of Energy and others to determine national policy.
Mm-hmm.
So what I tell everybody, we're ready. We're not going to be the bottleneck, but we sort of have to be ready to meet the demands of the public.
You just touched on something that I want to have you talk a little bit more about, and I expect that it is something that people may have doubts about, and that is the role of the commission. And clearly, as I said at the beginning, the role of the commission is to deal with licensing of reactors, reactor safety, and the waste issue. And you said that it was not the role of commission to be a promoter of nuclear power or an advocate for nuclear power. And that is, I suppose there are some people who might have some doubts about that. Is there in do you feel that in no way that it's the job of the NRC to be a an advocate for nuclear generation?
No, our job is to protect people and the environment. We're concerned both with safety and security, and so we are not a promoter. We are a regulator.
The last new plant to come online, you'll have to prompt me here. Was that 1990?
It was about 1992, and it was 1996, and it was Watts Bar Unit 1.
That's what that was the figure that I had in my head was 1996, and when would the did construction on that plant begin?
Oh, the construction on that one probably started about 10 years earlier. Just guessing. That was one of those in that era. There were the application probably for that plant was in before Three Mile Island.
And that, I'd say, points to something that I want to talk about. That is that the process of applying for and then building and getting a plant from the point of application to the point where it goes online, it takes a long time.
It does, David. And one of the things that we have changed, started in the early 90s, is our licensing process. So that's a good subject to talk about.
Well, is that if we ask this question, why is it that over the last 20 years, something like that, we've only had one new plant licensed and come online? Is that how much of that has to do, or would you say how much of that has to do with the licensing process that someone would have to go through if they decided that they wanted to build a new plant?
I think that was a significant factor. I think confidence in the licensing process caused people to be concerned about economic risk. But what has changed things now are the demand for electricity, concern about global warming, high cost of fossil fuels, and a variety of those things.
Mm-hmm. So you said that right now that you have in applications for 20.
Right, 12 applications for 20 nuclear plants.
For 20 plants, and that you think, in fact, by the end of next year, that might be as many as 30.
Correct.
And how long would you expect that it would, let us just say, we'll set aside the issue of how long it actually takes to build the plant. How long do you think that it would take on these applications, if indeed that went all through the whole process and they were approved, to get to the point where somebody could break ground?
There could be as many as three sites starting to do early site work next year, but we don't expect electricity to be flowing from any of these new plants until about 2016.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, these plants are extraordinarily complicated machines, and they are also extremely expensive to build. How much of this has to do with the fact that they have to be very tightly designed, perhaps over-designed? Is it possible that someone could come up with a design that would be a little simpler, that would make the process of licensing and construction go along a little bit more? I suppose some people would say, you know, why not just have one design? Why do you need any more than one? Get a scientist together, pick the one that's best, and everybody essentially build the same one, so that then that would make the licensing procedure and process go a lot more quickly if essentially any time someone was going to build a new plant, it was essentially the same plant.
Well, that's a great question, David. Is if you look, for example, at France, France has one utility and one vendor, and so they have been able to standardize their system. And so they can basically, every 10 years, they'll come out with a new model. But they basically have standardized their plants. And that's one of the things that, that we can do a lot better job in the U.S. And that's, in fact, one of the plans that we have underway, that we will now pre-approve, called Design Certify, a plant. And then a utility can go for two or three of those standardized pre-approved plants. Then they can do the environmental assessment of putting that plant on their location, and it will really simplify the licensing process with no compromise of safety. So, you know, what we had planned with our new licensing strategy is to pre-approve, you know, these plants, have them certified design. Then a utility would come in with and do their environmental study and then come in with their combined operating license application. We've sort of been overcome by events because of the demand for electricity, concern about global warming, high cost of fossil fuels. All of those factors have led to the utilities coming in earlier than expected on these plants. So we haven't maximized our efficiency of licensing, but we will get there, I think, as time goes on. Mm-hmm. So we will, I believe, be doing standardized plants, much like you indicated. The difference is that as a regulator, we can't force standardized designs, but we can certainly encourage it, and we will end up having probably four vendors that will be designing plants for construction in the United States.
All right. Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Dr. Dale Klein. He is the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Questions are welcome. Again, folks will help us if they can try to be brief, because we do want to certainly get in as many callers as we possibly can. Here in Champaign-Urbana, if you'd like to join us, 333-9455. And that is the local number. The toll-free line is 800-222-9455. And we have several callers here. And first couple of people in line are in Urbana. And we'll start with line number one. Hello.
Oh, yeah. Hi. How are you? The nuclear issue is actually a really important one, because I think if it's handled well, like in France, you could probably have, let's say, a majority of the electricity in the United States produced. And I think I agree with the streamlining of the process, limiting the designs to three or maybe two, four, because of the idea of competition, where General Electric is one of the primary contractors on the actual reactors themselves. But I was going to ask you about, I want you to address Yucca Mountain, because I know it's been dragged on forever. But also, I read in the New York Times, or either The Economist or New York Times, where about 20 years ago or whatever, the Yucca Mountain plant was supposed to, or reprocessing or whatever, storage facility was supposed to be built. So the federal government said, well, we'll, you know, if we don't have it finished by this date, we will pay you to store your, you know, use waste material on site. And I understand that that date is coming up real quickly, so I guess the taxpayers are stuck paying for this storage. And there's one other thing. Locally, there's a plan here in Clinton, and I noticed that it was closed down for 18 months. And when you read the literature, the Chicago Tribune, local papers and stuff, you got the impression that the people that were running that plant weren't actually up to snuff. So they shut it down due to, let's say, safety reasons, and they sold it to a company called Exelon, which I think is now one of the primary power suppliers in the state. And they bought it for a dollar, and to assume all debt. So could you address that issue? I personally think you guys need much stronger regulatory approval. I mean, I don't understand why you don't have a stronger regulatory power to, you know, like enforce design and enforce this and enforce that, because this is very dangerous stuff. And one other issue, about 2 years ago, a guy, an industrial designer, wrote a book about, he was hired by you guys to design a logo that could be figured out by somebody 10,000 years from now. They're going to stick it in Yucca Mountain. And I don't know, have you ever come up with a design? Could you address those issues? Thank you.
Okay, well, there are about three questions, and I'll take those in order. The first was on Yucca Mountain. The NRC did receive a license application June of this year from the Department of Energy to consider Yucca Mountain as the site for permanent high-level waste disposal. Our staff is currently reviewing that application to see if it is complete to be docketed, and then we will do our technical review. And as you indicated, the Yucca Mountain project has been one that has been challenging from a political process. Our job as a regulator is to make sure that it is safe and environmentally sound, and we will start doing that review. Congress has indicated they would like us to make a decision within 3 to 4 years And that ability to do that will depend on them providing us adequate funding to carry out those studies. The time in which Yucca Mountain originally was supposed to be open was 1998. That date obviously has come and gone, and there have been lawsuits by the utilities against the Department of Energy for not meeting those contractual obligations. That's not an area that the regulator gets involved in. That's between the utilities and the Department of Energy. Our job is to evaluate that license application in a technical, sound, and scientific manner. Regarding the Clinton plant, I don't know what Exelon paid for that plant, but clearly Exelon is a major operator of nuclear plants. They have a sound staff, technical competency, and have operated their plants generally pretty well. As a regulator, we tend to remind them never to become complacent, to do it in a safe and secure manner. And so we have resident inspectors at every plant, including Clinton, to ensure that it is operated in a safe and secure manner. In terms of the logo, that was not the NRC's assignment. That was the Department of Energy, where they were looking at a logo to put on the site where high-level waste would be stored. And I don't know if they came up with a logo design or not, but that was not the NRC.
And so just to make people understand this, now the Yucca Mountain site, would this be operated by the Department of Energy?
It will probably be operated by a contractor, but the license application is the Department of Energy. So the Department of Energy is the licensee.
And the Department of Energy and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, obviously they're both agencies of the federal government, but they are two separate entities.
That is correct, David. In the mid-70s, the Atomic Energy Commission was split into two functions. One was the promoter, one was the regulator. And so we are the regulators, and they wanted to split the promotion and the regulation. And so what now is the Department of Energy is viewed as the promoter, and we are viewed as the regulator.
And the NRC, and do correct me if I'm wrong about this, the NRC is responsible for civilian nuclear activities. Anything that has to do with defense, does not come under your responsibility?
That is 99% true. There are a couple of defense facilities that we license, but it's minimal. And so all the weapons activities is handled between NNSA, a independent arm of the Department of Energy, and the Department of Defense.
Hmm. Just very quickly, one other question. I promise I have some other people here I want to get to about Yucca Mountain. Once it is licensed and begins to receive waste. Now, this has been in the process for a long time. Nuclear plants around the country have been storing the waste on site, so there is a considerable amount that is out there in the world. What's the capacity of Yucca Mountain, and if all of the waste that's now being stored on site at nuclear plants around the country, if we took all of that and put it into Yucca Mountain, how close would that come to the filling the capacity of the site?
The current application for Yucca Mountain is at about 77,000 metric tons. About 70,000 metric tons is for civilian waste. About 7,000 is for the military program. So if you assume about 70,000 metric tons for the civilian side, in about 2000 we had about 40,000 metric tons. We generate about 2,000 metric tons a year. So the capacity of 70,000 is a legislative number. That is not a technical number. It was a politically determined number. And so it's not clear what number it could go to. What is being done now, David, is the spent fuel at reactors, once their spent fuel pool fills, they will move that fuel outside into what's called dry cask storage, and we license those facilities. And again, they are safe and secure. Our technical people have looked at these dry cask storage configurations and believe that these can be safely handled for about 100 years. So the storage of spent fuel is something that is being done safely and securely. But as a nation, we do need to move towards a permanent solution. But again, our job as a regulator is just to make sure whatever policy the government pursues, that it is safe and secure.
We have several of the callers next. Let's talk with someone in Urbana. This is line two. Hello.
I have one comment and three questions. The comment is that it's not your job on this, but it's the job of us consumers to reduce our use of electricity so that we don't have to pay for as many new power plants. They're costly and they raise electricity rates. And I think we need to take personal responsibility for looking around and seeing what we can do. But then the three questions. One is with regard to recycling nuclear waste. My understanding, and I can't remember where I saw this or heard it, is that in France, a lot of the nuclear fuel or other nuclear waste, can't be specific, I'm only partly informed here, is recycled and reused, and so there's less waste that needs to be stored long-term compared to the U.S. So that's question number one. Is that correct, and are we doing anything different, going to be doing anything different about that in the U.S.? Two, I'm pretty sure that it was on the program Now with David Brancaccio on WYLL-TV maybe a year or so ago. If it wasn't there, it was on Bill Moyers Journal, that there are deep concerns about protection against fire at nuclear facilities, that it is not adequate, and that fires would be really difficult to put out, excuse me, and cause major problems with the nuclear reactors. And the second concern about safety is that there isn't adequate protection against terrorist attacks. So could you address those three questions, if you have time?
Sure. Let me just comment on first. I think conservation is something that we all need to be aware of. And I know personally when I go out of a room, I now know to turn out the lights because my bill is lower. So there are a lot of things we can do on conservation, including technological innovations, and I think we all need to be aware of that. On your recycling question, you are correct. France does recycle their spent fuel. In fact, most major nuclear countries do recycle their spent fuel. We had a policy decision in the late 70s under President Carter to stop recycling. When President Reagan came in, he reversed that policy, but no company wanted to come in and take a risk again of building that plant and not recover their capital cost. So the Department of Energy has proposed a few years ago about reexamining that policy. And again, this is a policy that Congress and industry need to examine. And then once they come up with a plan, whether they want to recycle, our job will be to make sure it's done safely and securely. So most countries do recycle spent fuel. And when I was teaching, I would tell my students that if you think about our nation, we used to throw away aluminum cans. We now recycle them. And so from a technological standpoint, there are significant reasons to look at recycling. On the fire protection issue, clearly fire is one of those issues that we are very concerned about at nuclear plants, primarily for cable trays, to make sure that we can shut down the plant safely in the unlikely event that anything goes wrong. So we have a very strong fire protection system on all plants. And, again, we have resident inspectors at plants continuously, and we look at fire protection and take it very seriously. A lot of times you will hear about fires at nuclear plants, but most of these are in their substations and transformers outside the nuclear plant itself. So you will hear a lot of things about fires at nuclear plants that really are not related to the plant itself. And so just be aware of that when you hear things of fires in plants that may be completely outside. In terms of terrorist events, after 9/11, the NRC took a very aggressive relook at how do we protect these plants, and the industry has spent about $2 billion on security upgrades at the plant since 9/11. These plants are very robust. The containment around the plants are very thick, shielded concrete. There are barriers, arm guards, and so these plants are very hard targets for any terrorist to get at. And we also do force-on-force protections to ensure that the security force can repel a potential terrorist attack.
All right. I hope that gets to the question of the caller. I hope she wouldn't mind also if I move on here. We're at our midpoint. The lines are full. Let's go next to a caller here on our line number 3 in Champaign County. Hello.
Hi. There's a lot to talk about here, but the subsidy, the implicit subsidy of the Price-Anderson Act, I think is a good place to start. A lot of conservatives talk about how the government shouldn't pick technologies, but it doesn't seem to qualify or be important as regard to nuclear. Amory Lovins, who gets cited a lot when nuclear issues come up, I think is a really good critic, and he just says just put aside all of the safety issues and just look at what economists call the opportunity costs of going nuclear as opposed to all of the other things that could be done at a local, more decentralized level. I mean, when you have a suburb of Freiburg, Germany, fairly north, exporting electricity from the suburb, you actually making more electricity on their roofs than they consume. Things should be rethought, it seems to me. I wanted to focus, though, specifically on the letter that the NRC wrote in June, and this is regarding the so-called standardization attempt. Now, there isn't any standardized model. There's a lot of competing models. The letter you guys sent out in June 27th, I guess, I'm reading Harvard Wasserman, who's also a longstanding critic and works with the NIRS out of Chicago and Evanston, the Nuclear Information Resource Center services. But you basically threw the cards up, and I'm wondering whether this has anything to do with the lawsuit against the NRC by the what is the substance of that lawsuit, and does it relate to this very disappointing from the industry's point of view letter that said that, you know, basically threw the cards up in the air about standardization. There isn't any standardization. Can you tell me what you meant when that letter was sent out?
I'll address both of those. First of all, the Price-Anderson is not a subsidy. This, again, is better answered by the utilities.
Of course it's a subsidy.
The government makes money on Price-Anderson. The utilities pay for the insurance of Price-Anderson. This is not a program that is paid for by the government. So the utilities pay into a license fund, and that is not a subsidy by the taxpayers. The standardization activities that we are attempting is that, we cannot require all utilities to pick a specific plant. And so we do encourage standardization. And so what we will see is all Westinghouse AP1000s will be standardized. The boiling water reactors will be standardized. The Areva EPR will be standardized. And Mitsubishi Heavy Industries plant will be standardized. And so utilities will have a choice to pick between various vendors. But within a vendor, we strongly encourage standardization.
Hello?
You want follow-up?
Well,
yeah,
please. The Price-Anderson Act has this indemnification through the industry, but the basic subsidy is the fact that at a certain level, the federal government is responsible for the cost. The liability that is implied in the Price-Anderson is what I'm calling the subsidy. Perhaps, you know, you'll quibble with that, but there is an indemnification. But the fact that the government, if there, God forbid, would be a catastrophic accident, it is the federal government and thence the American public that will be paying for it.
Yeah, that's a policy decision by Congress, no different than the subsidy for Katrina, the subsidy for Gustav and other activities. And so in the unlikely event that there are major, major catastrophical activities, the government – you know, could and should come in and protect people and the environment.
Quick follow-up. I do have other callers.
Right. Well, I encourage you, David, to have some of these people on that I've cited, Amory Lovins, Wasserman. What is the substance of the lawsuit that I asked you, that you mentioned? What is the NRC being sued?
We get sued often, so I'm not sure which
well, the one you referred to. You referred to one where the industry is basically suing.
Oh, that's against the Department of Energy. That's not us. That's the industry is suing, have sued the Department of Energy for not taking the spent fuel.
I'm going to jump in here. We're past our midpoint. Lines are full, and I do want to get to some other folks. And also for the benefit of anybody who might have just tuned in, I want to introduce again our guest. Dale Klein is the chairman. Dr. Dale Klein is the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has had that post since the summer of 2006. He is the principal executive officer of and official spokesman for the NRC. He'll be on the campus of the University of Illinois next week for a panel discussion on the future of nuclear energy, starting at 3:30 in the afternoon. This is Thursday, September 11th at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center. It is open to the public. Also participating will be the president of the American Nuclear Society, the chief nuclear officer of Exelon Nuclear, and all of that's taking place on Thursday next week. This is part of a series of events to mark the 50th anniversary celebration of the Department of Nuclear Plasma and Radiological Engineering here at the U of I. Also next Thursday at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center, John Rich, the Director General of the World Nuclear Association, will deliver the featured lecture, Accelerating the Nuclear Renaissance, a Human and Environmental Imperative, and that's also open to the public. So if you're interested and finding out more about that, you go to the website of Nuclear Engineering. That's www.ne.uiuc.edu. We have a number of other callers, and I want to try to get in as many people as I can. We'll go to Washington, Indiana next on our toll-free line. This is line 4. Hello.
Yes, hello. I had a question about the sustainable plasma energy. They're building a plant in France to make that energy more available for sustainable plasma. And I had another question. When are these plants, nuclear plants, going to come online, and will they be cost-effective, or that raise our rates?
Okay, the plasma energy that's probably being done in France is called ITER. It's an international fusion program. That is a major research program, and so we're not expected to see any commercial activity out of that program for probably a few decades. In terms of the commercial nuclear plants that are currently being proposed, the NRC normally does not get involved in any of the economic choices that a utility would have to generate electricity. But if you look at the current generation of nuclear plants that are operating, the 104 plants that are running, they tend to generate among the lowest cost of electricity available today. I think that what the utilities have seen is the high cost of fossil fuels has certainly impacted their generation from natural gas and certainly from coal, and very few generated from oil anymore. So the utilities have to make choices. What do they think the long-term base load supply of electricity should be? And based on their calculations, they believe that these plants will be economical for a number of years. Keep in mind that the nuclear plants today, if they get a license renewal, will be able to operate for 60 years. So this new generation of plants certainly should be able to operate for at least 60, if not longer. So these are plants that will operate for a long, long period of time. And so therefore, over the long term, the economics tend to look pretty good, but that's a decision the utilities make.
Oh, okay, thank you. I'd like to see one come online there in Los Angeles. I come up out of there, and there's just all the cars and all the smog and all the everything's contributing to it, so anything will help, and I hope they are cost-effective.
All right. Well, then I just want to real quick get back to the economic issue, and I have some numbers here, and I'm hoping that these are accurate. I think that they are worldwide averages, but what it says here is that if you look at the average cost for kilowatt hour comparing gas, coal, and nuclear, that for natural gas, it's maybe averages around 4 cents a kilowatt hour. For coal, maybe about 5. And for nuclear, maybe about 12 or 13. So that puts the cost, the average cost, way for nuclear generation, way out ahead of the others. And assuming that that's correct, how do you account for the fact that nuclear generation is that much more expensive?
Those aren't numbers that I'm familiar with. The numbers that when I talk to the CEOs of the nuclear plants, they generally are generating electricity that are at about 2 cents. That's their generation cost today. And typically, they believe that if gas is at $6 a thousand cubic feet, nuclear is going to be less expensive, and so basically that's the decisions they go through. Certainly, those that are still regulated by the states, they'll go through their public utility commissions and make those choices. And so, in general, when you look at the cost of electricity today, for example, I am provided by electricity from Dominion, and Dominion will tell me what each generation that they have cost, and nuclear is the lowest.
All right. Well, it could be that either the figures I have are out of date, or maybe if they're averages of costs around the world, that might throw the average off, and it would be different if we were only looking at plans for the United States.
Yeah. In general, nuclear cost and coal cost tend to run fairly close and are the lowest of the choices. Natural gas and oil being much, much higher, and wind and solar much, much higher than that.
Let's take another caller here, and that would be somebody here in Champaign, I believe, where we are, line one. Hello.
Yeah, hi. What about the plant? Whatever happened, there was one in Braidwood. I think it came, it's in the southwestern part of Chicago. Are you familiar with that one?
Yes, there are two plants that are running today.
But I thought, that wasn't there one that they were using for storage or something or other they had a lot of problems with?
I know that there was a plant at Morris that was used for storing of spent fuel. But the Braidwood plant is up and running and performing quite well.
Okay, the other one.
We have resident inspectors there, so I assume they're working hard and doing their job.
Okay. When you said 2 cents, I just wonder whether all of the costs are considered. In other words, the initial development cost, and you know, extended over a certain period of time, and then afterward, what do you do with it? You know, when you walk away from a plant, what happens? You just it sets there, or what happens?
No, we have the NRC requires a decommissioning fund, so every operating nuclear plant has decommissioning funds that are built in to decommission the plant, and utilities will have a choice as to how they decommission. They can return it to a greenfield site, which some of the earlier small reactors have done, or they can do an entombment where they can remove major radioactive components but leave the robust concrete structure in place. And so,
okay. But I just wonder whether all these costs are considered, you know, over the long run in terms of projection. But that's just my comment. Thank you.
All right. Let's go on. We'll go next to a caller in Chicago, line two. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. I was just curious. Nobody's really brought up the fact that where do you dump the waste? I mean, Utah right now is having a fit. It's Utah, Nevada. I know those people over there are having a fit. There's lawsuits pending blocking that dump site in, I think it's Utah. I know for a fact in Europe, because most of my family is in Europe, the European countries right now are sending waste in different countries, and they're blocking that. They're having difficulties there. I mean, and I've heard of another country actually recycling some of that. The point being, I don't know why people don't understand this. I don't think nuclear waste is clean. It might be clean burning, but you got tons of waste coming out of there. What do you do with it? I mean, where does it go? I don't want it in my backyard. I'll get off and listen. Thank you.
Well, I think that's usually the challenge of any waste, whether it's garbage that's picked up on a daily basis or trash on the streets. Everybody wants it picked up, but no one wants it put down. So typically, it will be put down somewhere. In terms of nuclear waste. All the countries in the world that have nuclear plants believe the ultimate disposal site is a stable geological formation that has been stable for millions of years and will likely be stable for many thousands to millions of years in the future. As we had indicated earlier, a lot of countries do recycle their spent fuel. Therefore, the volume of waste is small. Probably the first countries that will have a permanent geological disposal will be Sweden and Finland. Those plants are being constructed now. And in Sweden, you have the reverse of not in my backyard. You have two communities that are advocates for the permanent disposal site because they believe it's safe and it provides jobs. So I think the permanent solution that all nuclear countries are looking at the end of the day will be a stable geological formation that has been stable for millions of years and will likely be stable in the future.
On again to another caller. This is somebody on cell phone, line number one. Hello.
Oh, hi.
Yes.
Didn't know I was next. So, yeah, I was going to ask about the 2 cents per kilowatt hour that the guest had mentioned. I just wanted to find out if that actually included the cost of waste disposal and if it included the increased time for in cost of the plant. Is that just an operating cost, or does that factor in how much money goes into creating these plants and disposing of the waste?
The 2 cents per kilowatt hour is primarily what is called the operation and maintenance cost. Most of the plants are on a 30-year depreciation cycle, and the accountants will handle that. It does include the waste disposal. The federal government has been charging the nuclear utilities a mil per kilowatt hour since about 1982 for the generation of the electricity, for which then the government will take the responsibility of disposing the spent fuel. So the 2 cents is operational maintenance, but it does include waste disposal.
I'm guessing you don't have data on whether that 2 cents actually covers the entire cost of Yucca Mountain and whatever.
It would include Yucca Mountain. The Nuclear Waste Fund is several billions of dollars that has been generated from the electricity. And so the Yucca Mountain, if it is licensed, where the high-level waste disposal is basically paid for by ratepayers, not by taxpayers, and it's at
okay.
Kilowatt hour.
I actually had another question about the startup time. One argument that I've heard about starting up with nuclear plants is that in the U.S. we have a 10-year construction time, and in that time, the number of wind generators that we could put up just the amount of time that we lose waiting to construct nuclear power plants means that much more, emissions go into the air from coal.
In general, if you look at the construction time, those countries that have built plants more recently than the United States, like Japan, have built some of the plants in 39 months. So typically for the United States, we're assuming a construction time of about 4 to 5 years. So when you look at the start to finish, it will take the NRC several years to approve and review the license application, but it's not expected that the construction time will be 10 years. It's more like 4 to 5.
I see, but the relevant fact, I guess, is that it wouldn't be in operation for, in that cycle, maybe 8 years, in which time no emissions are negated. Is that right?
Well, I think what the utilities typically do is they look at their base load. They need to look at when do they need to add capacity, and then they will make a decision. Say, for example, they need another 1,000 megawatts by, let's say, 2020. They will start years ahead to start planning on what that generation source will be, whether it's going to be coal, gas, nuclear, wind, solar. But if it's base load, it's primarily going to be coal, nuclear, natural gas. And they will start years ahead to start planning so that they will have the plant in operation at the time they need their base load.
So plants in the planning could actually be started, can start construction next year, presumably,
right,
if there are any.
Yeah, so for example, we do expect likelihood some early non-safety-related site works might start for some of these nuclear plants in 2009 while we're reviewing the applications.
Okay, thanks very much.
All right, thank you. We have maybe 3-4 minutes left in this hour of Focus 580. Our guest is Dr. Dale Klein. He's the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Just to come back to pick up to a point that we discussed a little bit earlier, someone raised this question of reprocessing of nuclear, of spent fuel, as a way of reducing the waste that has to be dealt with later. And we talked about the fact that at one point the United States did do that, and then I think that you said it was during the Carter administration we suspended that, and then there was the decision made that we could start doing it again, but that we don't. And that I guess I thought that the concern here, or one of the concerns, was that in that reprocessing, what you're ending up doing is producing material that can be used to make nuclear weapons, and that this was a proliferation issue, and that was the real worry there. Is that indeed what the real worry is about that?
There are some individuals who are concerned that if we reprocess, we will essentially, one could use that material for weapons, but no country has ever developed a nuclear weapon from commercial high burn-up spent fuel. Typically, if a country wants a nuclear weapon, they will have special production reactors to make that plutonium, or they will have high-enriched uranium from centrifuges to make weapons-grade material. So the non-proliferation argument has been around for a long time, but no country has ever used high burn-up spent fuel to get that plutonium. And the reason it doesn't work is that you have a mixture of plutonium isotopes. Some are absorbers and some are automatic emitters, and so it just does not make good weapons material.
So do you think that the as we talked at the beginning of the program, it was a long time, there was a long time where no new plants are built, and then only one has been built. We, as you explained, you now have a number of applications, 20 pending, and you said that you think maybe that might go up by another 10 by the end of next year. So do you, and we talked about a lot of things, a lot of issues with nuclear power, and certainly in some people's minds, the economics are certainly an issue. Do you think that the economics, though, perhaps given the increasing cost of energy, that are starting, the economics are starting to shift, and that makes it more favorable, or would make it make a utility company say can give more consideration to the idea of building a new plant?
I think it absolutely has, David. I think if you look at needing baseload electricity, that you need 24 hours a day. In the past, we primarily looked at that coming from coal and from nuclear. Obviously, there's a lot of concern about global warming, and so some states have basically said, we don't want a coal plant. You know, we don't want to increase our CO2 emissions. There's also concerns about what will be the future carbon tax or a cap and trade for the CO2 emissions. So I think all of those factors have led the utilities to look more favorable for nuclear plants. Again, the current economics of those plants that have been built demonstrate that it can be done safely and economical. And so they're looking at the next 60 years or so and saying that nuclear should be a part of the energy portfolio. Hmm.
I think that here in our conversation this morning, as far as the callers are concerned, we've heard from people who have concerns about economic issues, political issues perhaps. Certainly there is a lot of concern about the problem of waste storage. One thing that we really haven't heard about is the concerns, and I'm sure that people have these concerns, about safe plant operation. That is, that they would just as soon not have a nuclear plant located next to the place where they lived. I guess I'm thinking about the fact that over time, having talked with some people who were nuclear scientists who worked in that area, that somehow that they felt that there was a public misunderstanding about the risks associated with nuclear generation. And I'm not trying to make an endorsement here, merely giving you the opportunity as someone who this is your area, to talk about how it is you think that people's feelings about nuclear power, and whether you feel that indeed people are more scared or more nervous about it than perhaps they should be or they would be if they had the kind of background that you have.
Well, David, that's a good point. I think if you talk to the general public, and I did a lot of this when I was at the University of Texas, is that typically they don't want any plant near them. You know, they don't want a coal plant, they don't want a gas plant, they don't want a nuclear plant, but they want electricity. So at the end of the day, we have to have a plant somewhere to provide the electricity that people need, and then we have to look at the choices from it. I do think that nuclear is a supply that a lot of people have unnecessary fears about from the standpoint radiation is something you can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't taste it, and so your fears tend to get propagated every now and then. And so for those of us that are in the business that want to make sure these plants operate safely every day, you know, we know what the risks are. We live it every day, and so we have a much better understanding. And so that's probably what you're hearing from the people that work at the plant. You know, they understand what they need to do to make it safe. They do it every day. They're serious. They live in the communities. Their families live in the community, so they want to make sure these plants operate safely. Our job as a regulator is to make sure that people don't become complacent, that they do pay attention to safety every day. And that's where I think the industry has done a relatively good job. You know, the plants do run safely. They provide 20% of electricity for the American public in a safe way. It doesn't lead to exporting dollars to overseas for oil, for example, where people don't like us very well. So, again, I'm not a promoter. I'm a regulator. But I think the general public believes that nuclear should be part of our energy mix.
Our guest in this hour, Focus 580, Dale Klein. He is the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has had that post since July of 2006. He will be on the campus of the University of Illinois to take part in a panel discussion on the future of nuclear energy, and this will take place next Thursday, September 11th at 3:30 in the afternoon at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center. It is open to the general public, and it's part of a series of events marking the 50th anniversary of the Department of Nuclear, Plasma, and Radiological Engineering here at the U of I. Dr. Klein, thank you very much.
Well, I hope that's helpful, and I hope that's been educational for your listeners.
Oh, we appreciate you giving us your time.